Well, before we get started, as I said, I need to get the legal niceties out of the way. I want to be able to get on tape your authorization for us to do this interview with you, and the recorded recordings of this interview will be placed at the University of Lafayette, at LSU, and at the Sea Grant office, Louisiana Sea Grant in Baton Rouge. And they're going to be used for research purposes. It may be used by scholars who are going to be working on articles or pamphlets or even books. We recently had some people in Terrebonne Parish use it to make a historical calendar. It may be used in documentaries. But the bottom line is that there's no monetary compensation for anyone involved. So, you know, don't book your tickets for Europe just yet. So in any event, we'd like to get your authorization to do this at any time. If you feel uncomfortable with any of the questions, or if you're tired and would like to stop, just let me know immediately, and we'll take care of it. But first things first, is it okay for us to Okay, well, if I can get you to begin by giving us your full name and tell us where and when you were born.
Okay. My name is... Should I give them the way it's pronounced here or there?
No, there. How your family would have pronounced.
Okay. My name is Levin LeJean. I was born on April 28, 1938, in Iota, Louisiana.
Okay. And you grew up in, I would imagine, a rice-farming family?
No, I grew up in the town of Iota.
Oh, you grew up in the town of Iota.
Right. But I had aunts and uncles, relatives and cousins that were farmers, rice farmers.
Well, can you describe what life was like in Iota? Because Iota itself serviced the people like your relatives who were involved in the rice industry. In fact, my maternal grandmother grew up just outside Iota,
okay.
And they were involved in the rice industry. So, tell us a little bit of what life was like in the town.
Well, the population is 1,200. Thereabouts at that time, you know, everyone knew everyone else, you know, they knew everybody, you know, so life was, as I recall it, rather slow, but enjoyable, you know. Went to a Catholic school during elementary school, then I went to the high school, and so I would walk to school, you know, from, you know, to the high school, you know. So it was, you know. Best I knew, it was a good life. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about first of all about the makeup of the community itself, and then I'd like to switch over to talk about school.
Okay.
The community out there consists, I'm sure, of a handful of generally grocery stores. I'm sure.
They had probably three major grocery stores, okay, during that period of time, you know. But you got to remember, when I grew up, I was born in 38, you know, so I grew up in the 50s, you know, in the 40s and the 50s, you know. So they had three grocery stores. They had one movie theater for a period of time. But, you know.
How many doctors were there in town?
There was one. Yeah, there was one doctor, okay. And, you know, I need to retract that. There probably, when I was growing up, there's one doctor, okay. And he lived in Iota, and he had a little office, okay. And he drove to his office in a buggy, okay, Parson buggy. And he'd tie up, you know, his buggy behind his office, okay. So that's common practice for it, okay. And so you had that one doctor, then you had one dentist also, okay? And so for any other major health issues, you had to go to Crowley as a rule. I think Crowley was the choice for some reason. I don't know why Crowley was the choice versus Jennings or Eunice. I don't know why that was.
Well, it was a parish seat.
Right.
Probably. You know, when I was a kid, those parish boundaries were important.
Right.
A lot more important than they are now.
Right.
I know in the case, my maternal grandmother was a miller, and whenever there was a family reunion, half the family was Lutheran, half the family was Catholic. Can you talk a little bit about the religious breakdown in the community? Was it predominantly Catholic?
It was predominantly, it was predominantly Catholic, you know, because you had the Catholic high school there. And
this was St. Francis?
St. Francis, correct. Okay. St. Francis High School. And but they also had, other churches there had right behind the little house where we lived, you know, had Lutheran church, okay? And then they had a Baptist church, and then I can't remember the other denomination, you know. And but it was predominantly Catholic, yes. Okay.
Now, I know my family, my mother, grandmother's family, the Millers, even though they're originally German, they were all French people.
Right.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the linguistic situation in and around Iota at the time that you were growing up?
I grew up, you know, and my grandmother lived with us, okay? For, I remember that, you know, as a young child. But, you know, she died and I was only like 2-3 years old, okay? And so the only thing that she spoke was French, okay? So as a result, when I went to school, I knew how to speak. I did not know how to speak English, okay? When I was in, back then they had first grade or kindergarten, okay? So the nuns taught me how to speak English, okay? I mean, that's basically what happened, okay?
Well, talk a little bit about that situation, because people who are our age are the last ones who were part of classes where they either didn't speak English themselves or had classmates who didn't speak English when they started school.
And, you know, I was in that minority, if you would, where I spoke both languages, you know, French. Not all of my friends or the classmates I grew up with did that, okay? A lot of them were English speaking, okay? Now, maybe you don't want this information, but the makeup, you know, of the children or the kids in school, okay, a lot of them were from the farms, okay? They took the buses into school, okay, whether it's from Oldwater or, you know, Basile or wherever it was, okay, or Tipitate in that general area. And so they'd come in by school bus, all right? But then also you had kids there, because during that period of time, oil drilling was pretty prevalent, you know.
And this was mostly up toward Tipitate?
Right, Tipitate or Evangeline even, or Egan even, you know. And so they would, so you had children that were, their parents were in the oil business, so they weren't local, I said locals, but, you know, we had a diversity of children there, okay, or classmates, okay. And so, but yeah.
When I attended school in St. Landry Parish, we drew for a large area like that. And there was definitely a rural mentality, rural neighborhood mentality. And different rural neighborhoods didn't get along terribly well. Was that the case also?
No, not that I recall, you know. It seemed like everyone got along well, you know. Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was any animosity towards one another, you know. I think we all got along pretty well.
Well, that's interesting.
as I remember.
Now, how did the nuns, you said that the nuns sort of were the facilitators, linguistic facilitators, in getting him into an English-speaking educational environment.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that, how they went about bringing people into an English-speaking
arm? I don't know, Carl. You know, I was probably, you know, I say different, but I mean, I was probably one of the few that didn't speak English, okay?
Right.
Where the majority of the others probably did speak English.
Okay, so they didn't basically do anything special?
No, I don't think so. Right, okay. Right.
Were you punished at all for speaking English on the school road?
I don't recall that, okay? I really don't. I don't remember that. I've heard stories about that, but I don't remember experiencing that, okay?
It's interesting because it happened in my school.
Okay.
Okay, well, St. Francis at the time was first grade through 12?
Yeah. I think it's right, yeah, it was.
And I remember even when I was in high school, I was still in the high school there, about how big was your class?
You're talking about in elementary school?
Well, yeah.
The graduating class, we were 38, I believe it is. Okay, we're 38 in that class.
That's actually pretty good size class, right?
Right.
Community school.
Right.
I went to a public, finished at a public school, and we had 63.
Okay.
And when I finished the sanitation, so we had 33.
Right, yeah.
So, you've gone to St. Francis School, you've grown up in the community, and what were basically your economic opportunities if you had stayed in that area?
The economic opportunities were slim or non-existent, basically, okay? And so that's probably why I left, okay? Because I graduated, in 57, okay, like in May of 57. Okay, so I left, shortly thereafter, okay? And because I had I moved to Lake Charles, stayed with an aunt and uncle, okay? But I didn't have transportation, until I got gainfully employed and got some, money, to get transportation, whatever, and then be out on my own, okay? And so that's why I left,
Okay, well, you said you went to Lake Charles, you had relatives there. I would assume you went there also because there were more economic options.
Right, that's right. And there were, okay. And that's why, I didn't see the opportunities there in Iota, okay. I was working for a guy, but I worked, because I grew up in a very poor family. I really did, So I worked before school, okay, and after school and during the summers, okay, for this man that owned a grocery store. So before school, I'd open the grocery store up and all that stuff, and then after school, I'd close up the store and whatever. So as a result, probably my school grades suffered, okay? So I wasn't the best student in the world, okay? But I did leave.
Yeah, I know that in the case of people from my community, and we left our home communities for the same reason. We had absolutely no economic opportunity at all. The best job I could have hoped for was working in a potato packing plant, making somewhat less in minimum wage. So I guess at least half of my graduating class moved immediately to towns in the area, usually Lafayette. But moving to town meant moving to a very different environment, a way of life.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about adapting to those new circumstances?
Well, it was a change, a social change, obviously, interacting with people that you didn't know or trying to make some friends, so it was totally different, okay? But, I survived. I mean, I did okay, I guess, didn't get any trouble or whatever.
One of the things that we found, at least people from my community, in moving to a community like Lafayette or a much bigger town, was that we immediately became sort of the interface between the family back in the country or in the small towns and the state bureaucracy or any major corporations or whatever, big box companies or you know, Social Security or whatever in the towns. Did that happen to you? And if it did, can you talk a little bit about helping the old folks negotiate?
No, I don't recall that. I really don't, you know. I don't remember that being, okay, or experiencing that, okay. Or if it did happen, I didn't recognize it, okay. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Were you able, or to what extent were you able to stay in touch with your family after moving?
Oh, yeah. Well, I made it a point, I guess, is because you're expected to do that, okay? You know, so, yeah, I did keep in touch, okay? Went back on a regular basis or whatever, yeah. I did do that, you know? And, you know, and so once we got established, whatever, you know, I'd make sure they'd come and visit us or whatever, okay? And, yeah. So, yeah, I did stay in touch, yeah, with my mother especially, right?
Speaking of mothers, I know in my own, from my own experience and in my own neighborhoods, the mothers were kind of the glue that forced children living elsewhere. As you know, children of my generation began to disperse and moving into places like Baton Rouge, Lafayette, New Orleans, they're the ones who insisted that the children come home.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was expected of you. Especially the holidays. You know, holidays were expected. You know, whether it's Easter or whatever it was. Yeah. But in between there too, they expected you. You know, to visit more often. You know, than you really did or had time to do. Okay. And so yeah, that was expected of you. Yeah.
Well, that's basically it in a nutshell. Can you, am I missing any important questions that I should have put on the table?
Well, no, I mean, I don't know. You tell me. You know? But, you know, I worked at different things. You know, I worked at this grocery store, but then also during growing up, you know, with those relatives I had in the rural community, you know, I picked cotton, you know, growing up, you know.
Well, tell me a little bit about that. So your family raised cotton instead of...
Well, no, I mean, cousins did, or, you know, uncles did, okay? But,
right, well, that's what I meant, the extended family.
Right, extended family did, right.
Right.
And, you know, now, I wasn't a regular cotton picker, okay? But I did, you know, during my youth, I did, you know, pick cotton. Then you might be able to identify with this.
I pick cotton too. So
but you know, but also, you know, in the rice fields back then, for some reason or other, they weren't using chemicals to you know, they had volunteer weeds that would come up, so you'd go in the water and pull those weeds up, okay? So I did some of that also, okay, you know.
But did you go crawfishing in the...
No, crawfishing back then wasn't... common, as I recall, you know what I mean? But, as ponds as we know them today.
Right.
They weren't as popular.
My father-in-law and his family would go into the canals and they'd sort of seine, mm-hmm. and then they'd also get crawfish early in the way.
Okay. Now, my cousins maybe they did, but you know, I didn't remember doing that. Okay. Now, when I'd go spend the night sometimes, we'd go frogging. You know, go frogging in the ditches, you know, in the country. You did some of that.
With lights?
Yeah, right.
The
Not carbide lights, but just battery lights. Okay, I don't remember the carbide lights. Okay, or using carbide lights. Okay.
Gigging?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, I wasn't good at it, okay? My cousin was, but
Was this for home consumption, or did
doing
it to send them to rain?
No. It was just, you know, consumption. Yeah.
Fried frog legs.
As I recall, yeah. Right. But I don't think there was enough to feed the whole world. Okay.
Well, tell me a little bit about what else you ate. What would have been a typical weekday meal when you were here growing up?
well, rice was, you know, pretty prevalent, okay? I mean, that was a common, you know, you didn't have a meal without rice, okay? But then, you know, rice and gravy, and, you know, and with, you know, meat normally, okay, of some sort.
Okay. Seasonal vegetables.
Seasonal vegetables, and then seafood, you know.
So you had seafood.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, I had cousins that fished, okay, and, you know, they would come by after they had, you know, caught or whatever, and they'd sell their fish to my family, okay? So, yeah, we had seafood.
Fresh water fish?
Right, yeah, it was fresh water, yeah. Right, it was fresh water. Yeah.
Catfish
usually, right. But they also did gar fishing, too, okay? I don't remember, maybe we bought, probably did, bought some gar fish from them, but it's primarily catfish, you know, I remember.
They do.
Right. Right, exactly. Right. With the gravy. Right.
So, what about Jerry Wood? Since Mardi Gras coming up fast, what could have been a Lenten meal?
Well, since you had probably a lot of times, you know, if you didn't have the seafood or whatever, you had egg, you know, that made egg stew or whatever. Okay, but then also, you know, shrimp or whatever, but,
well,
you know.
I was going to ask you about that. Dried shrimp or fresh shrimp?
Well, fresh shrimp is a rule, okay? Maybe dried also, okay? But then, you know, sometimes you had eggs, you know, my mom would make an egg stew, you know, and maybe you never had that, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay, and, but, yeah, yeah.
What about fried eggs and rice? Did you all
Yeah,
that?
Right, did. Yeah, had, you know. Sometimes during the winter, you know, that would be have the rice and then fry eggs and then put it, you know, all together. Right, yeah, yeah. Had some of that also.
Yeah, my mom did that too. Sunday dinner.
Potato salad is a commonplace, okay, common, you know, fare. Okay, potato salad, the rice, you know, and probably chicken or pork roast, you know, but, you know, with vegetables, whatever the vegetables were, but yeah, you definitely had, you know, rice and with potato salad. You know, it was commonplace. You know, you always had potato salad.
What about barbecue? What's that?
Yeah, on Sundays, especially on Sundays, right? That was, you know, normally, you know, it was a cookout, so to speak. Okay, with the old barrel, you know. Barbecue pit.
Right, 55-gallon.
Exactly, right, that's right.
What about gumbo?
Yeah, gumbo is, you know, common, okay.
Chicken and sausage?
Well, chicken sausage, normally, you know, chicken sausage usually, as I recall, yeah.
Was it smoked sausage or fresh?
No, it was smoked.
Smoked.
Right.
What about boudin? Were they making boudin out there in that time?
Yeah, because they'd have the hogs were killed, okay? So then you had the family gathering, so to speak.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about the boucherie then.
The boucherie, that's right. You know, and so everybody would go there and, you know, and help out, you know, whether they butchered one hog or two hogs or however many they killed, you know, or butchered. You know, then they would help cutting up the meat and all that stuff, okay?
Well, let me ask you a little bit about the sort of the mechanics and the organization of it. I know in other parts of Acadia Parish, there was usually a community association of maybe as many as 20, 22 families, and they would rotate on a weekly basis. Each family's turn to provide a hog or some other animal for slaughter.
They probably did, but I was not aware of it, okay? The ones that I attended growing up were at, like, my uncle's, you know, relatives' homes, where, you know, the sisters and brothers would go in and help, okay, to do that, okay? So I don't remember.
Okay, so this was strictly a family.
Right, the ones I attended, the ones I was familiar with. You're right,
okay.
Exactly.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about how they function? I assume they started probably at the crack of dawn.
Right, yeah, early morning or whatever, okay.
Okay, but can you talk a little bit about how those things were organized and who did what? What did the men do?
Well, the men, you know, would go and kill the pig, obviously, and, you know, draw the blood.
Right.
You know, draw the blood, you know, to make the boudin, okay? And then, you know.
So they slaughtered the hog, they cut it up.
Right.
And then the women took that
and started, you know, cutting it up and, you know, doing for the cracklings and all that, you know, cutting up, you know, and for the cracklings and all that, right, yeah.
So basically the men are working outside, the women essentially are working inside.
Right, well, or on the outside, on, you know, I remember, you know, just
the big old table,
you know, with, you know, saw hearts or whatever, and they had the planks or the boards or whatever, you know, to cut up the, you have to remember it was cold, too, because, you know, that's when they killed the hog, when it was cold, okay, yeah, because of refrigeration or lack of refrigeration, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, that leads me to another question. I know in some places like Point Noir, around between Richard and Church Point, they didn't get electricity. Rural electrification didn't reach them until 1950 or 1951. Do you remember electricity? Or maybe
like
you live
like
town, so you all probably already had electricity.
No, not really. You know, I grew up, you know, we didn't have electricity, okay? We used, I'd study by, as young. Okay. In elementary school, I used kerosene lamps to study by. Okay, that's what we did. Okay, so we didn't have refrigeration. You know, so I had quote ice box, not a refrigerator, ice boxes.
Okay. So someone would deliver the ice?
No, I'd go pick it up. I'd go get it, walk it. Okay.
And where would you get the ice?
They had a guy that had the a meat market. Okay, there in town. Okay, also had the ice house. Okay, right adjacent to the to his meat market.
Did he make his own ice, or did he buy it from
a factory,
like it's Crowley?
As I recall, he had his own ice. Okay, because I remember in the back of the place, you know, had the.
So you would buy the big block.
Right, or what I could carry. You know, it wasn't a big block, but it was a block that I could handle. Right.
You use the ice top.
Well, no, I didn't know. I just had it was on twine or whatever. Okay, yeah.
So you got the block home, and then what did you do with it?
Well, in the icebox. Okay.
How long would it last, normally?
I don't remember that. I really don't. But, you know, probably 2-3 days, I'm guessing. Okay. Because the icebox wasn't that large.
Right.
Okay.
So what did your family normally keep in an icebox?
Gee, Carl, I guess milk, you know, and stuff like that.
What I would have guessed.
Yeah, whatever, you know, was perishable. Right, yeah.
Did your family have what was essentially, I guess, probably Mississippi, they would call it pie safe? It was basically.
Yeah, right. We didn't have that. Okay, at our house. Okay.
A pie safe.
Yeah.
Right. We didn't have that, but you know, my aunts and uncles in the country had pie safes. Okay, and then they had, as I recall, there in the kitchen, they had a window that had, it was screened in or whatever, okay? I don't know if that makes sense to you, okay?
Yeah.
And it put food there too, okay? In between meals, it was in between, you know, dinner and, you know, supper or whatever, right, yeah.
Well, that's basically what a pie safe was used for here, was to basically keep the flies
off. Right,
that's right.
Cabinet.
Right, that's right.
With greens.
That's right, yeah. Right. Right, yeah, that's right. But in addition, they had that, you know, over a kitchen window, you know, screened in or whatever, shelving or whatever, and they put some food there, too. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, while we're on the subject of pie safes, let's talk a little bit about sweets. Did your mom cook sweets?
Oh, yeah.
What would you normally fix?
Well, cakes with pies, you know she,
what kind of cakes for starters?
Just plain cakes, you know, with like pineapple, you know, fillings and coconut, yeah, coconut, pineapple. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And what about pies? Were they sweet dough pies? Were they salty dough, meringue?
I don't remember, you know, I don't remember it being meringue, okay, but just the regular, you know, fruit pies.
Okay.
You know, whether a fig or, you know.
So essentially a sweet dough pie.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's about it for now.
Okay.
I'd like to reserve the option to come
back.
Well,
sure, yeah, right. Because you might be driving down the road and say, oh, I should have added this and that and yes.
That's usually how it goes.
Well, I mean, but I'm sincere, okay? Yeah. And hope that's answered your questions properly. And,
oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. And as I said, there's no right or wrong answer.
Right.
Basically, we're just trying to preserve this knowledge for future generations because life has changed so much here.
Right.
Over the course of the last generation. I talked to my kids about what my life was like growing up in the 50s. You know, I may as well be talking about living on Mars, you know,
right.
As far as they're concerned.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm sitting here listening, and our grown-up phase was almost exactly opposite.
Right.
Yet they were the same.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have Catholics where I came from.
Right.
You know, we had Baptist, small community. Had Baptist and had a high school, 12 grade high school. At two churches. I didn't know about the second church for a long time. It was a Pentecostal church. And my grandmother was a Pentecostal. My granddaddy, Miller, was a Baptist. And all the kids brought up Baptist. Except one or two of the girls kind of snuck off with grandma.
But that's exactly what we want. It is you coming in from the outside when we talk to you next time,
but yeah.
Looking at the things that struck you about what made this area different.
Yeah, because that was, man, I didn't even know that until I got up to be a grown man.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And on Sunday, it was always chicken.
Okay.
And the preacher was coming.
Okay.
The preacher would come over to the house and say, oh, I have fried chicken.
Yeah.
Rice and beef, of course, and biscuits.
Right. But, you know, like, you know, our family, my growing up, the Catholic Church was the nucleus. I mean, it really was.
Yeah.
It was the nucleus of my growing up,
yeah.
You know. Because, you know, I'm sure didn't miss church. Did not miss church. You know what I mean?
Let's talk a little bit about social life before we wrap up. I mean, this is one question I was going to kick myself and not ask you. Did they still have house dances, or was that gone by the time you were growing up?
I don't remember. They probably did, but I wasn't aware of it. Perhaps
switched over to neighborhood dance halls.
Yeah, they had one there in Iota on the main street. They had a dance hall. That's correct, you know, and it was very active on the weekends, on Saturdays, as I recall. Right.
Local musicians playing what kind of music?
Well. Well, it was, you know, French music. I mean, yeah, there was no other music but French, you know, as I recall.
Accordion-based?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's the 50s kind of a transition period, you know. They
right.
Were Bob Wilson, Gary Randburns, and the Western Swing.
Right.
During the 40s, they got their influence. But by the 50s, but certainly by the time you graduated from high school, the accordion should have been making something to come back.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because they had a dance hall there outside of Iota called the Four Corners. I don't know if you're familiar with the Four Corners, okay? But there's a road, you know, you went down and they called the Four Corners because it's a crossroad,
right.
Okay? You had Timamu there,
right.
Okay? And then if you took a left, you went back towards Evangeline. You took a right, you'd be going towards Tipitate,
okay,
or going towards Bazille, or going towards Bazille, right. If you would, right. And so they had, you know, a dance hall there, okay.
Four Corners,
that's right. but which was, as a teenager, okay, that's when I remember that being there, okay. Where versus the dance hall was gone by that time, you know, because the dance hall was like for my parents and my aunts and uncles and all that. You know, that age group, okay, that generation, right, that's right.
What kind of music did you grow up listening to? I assume Speaking of music, did your family have a radio in the house?
Yeah. Right.
And what did you listen to? What kind of music did you listen to?
It was probably the French music, right, as I recall.
Did you listen? I know there were a lot of clear channel stations still operating in the 50s. Did you listen to national programs like that, music programs coming out of Nashville?
I don't think so. I don't remember doing that. It was just local, like the Crowley radio station.
KSIG
or Jennings, or whatever. Yeah. But I remember KSIG primarily, you know. So there's the music that you
know. Okay, well, I think I'm getting to the brain dead stage, so I think it's really time to wrap it up at this point. But thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you.
And we'll be back to talk to you about the distant future.
Now, see, you have the advantage, okay? You're eavesdropping here, and you got the, you know, you got the gist of the program.
I've been around you long enough to try to learn.
Shit.
All right,
thank
guys.
You. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You don't remember the bass on Saturday night? On the radio? Like, we had a movie on there. Except when Lloyd Bear. No. Past Blue Ribbon, Friday Night Fights. Mm-hmm. All of us used to get around those radios.
Well.
All of them.
They had a little
big deal, but that's the only time I remember
a place there in town, an appliance store. Okay, you probably remember in Lake Charles, Foray's,
right.
F-O-R-E-T.
Right,
okay,
yes.
Well, that's where it grew. You know, was born. It was in Iota. Okay, the Foray's. Okay, and so he had sold TVs. Okay, so he had a place there where the play glass window, if you would, okay?
Yeah.
So when on fight night, he'd leave the TV on.
And people would gather out front?
Out front,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he did. Sure did. That's right. Yeah.
Well, your family, I'm sure, didn't have a TV before you left for Lake Charles.
That's correct. They did not. That's exactly correct, yeah. That's after the fact. Yeah. We grew up without air conditioning and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Well, okay, guys. Well, thank you.
Thank you.